Associate Professor of Education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, Assistant Professor of Educational Leadership at UW-Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. Those of us who are interested in education and history have probably seen some iconic photos of school desegregation, such as the one of little Ruby Bridges being escorted into her New Orleans elementary school by U.S. Marshals, or students walking into Little Rock High School in Arkansas through crowds of protesters, or even a young boy throwing a rock at a bus full of students in Boston. We've seen those, and a lot of us have lived through those days, but one of the things that we probably don't know a lot about in our area is what it was like to be in a segregated school and what schooling was like during that somewhat turbulent time in our history. So we are really lucky today to have two guests who have firsthand experience with schools in the southern part of the United States, and now with schools here in Kenosha, and they can sort of help us compare and contrast those experiences. So our first guest today is Mrs. Charity Cooks, who is a retired, she's retired from Sears and from Snap-on Tools, but is a grandmother of five, and her role today is as foster grandmother at Bowes Elementary School, where she has earned the name Grandma Love from the students and was recently featured in a Kenosha News story. Welcome, Charity. Can you say hello to the guests, our listeners?
Hello to everyone.
Thank you so much for coming. Our other guest is Mike Kehoe, who's probably familiar to listeners of Education Matters. He's a part-time staff here at WGTD and has hosted this show. He's a retired attorney, and currently he's a special ed support person at Bullen Middle School full-time. He also volunteers at the Kenosha History Center, a familiar voice to everyone. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you very much for doing this program.
So this was a program that was actually suggested to me a while ago by Mike, because he and Charity had discovered they sort of had a little bit of common experience in their past, but actually not common. So can you tell me how the two of you met and how you figured out that you sort of had this connection, particular for a short time in Alabama, but then, you know, sort of how you connected?
Well, we both lived in Marengo County, Alabama, which considers itself the heart of Dixie, in what's called the Black Belt in Alabama. It's called the Black Belt not because of black people, although the population of the Black Belt is 65% black. Mm-hmm. But it was originally because of the black soil there that was so good for cotton, and that's where the plantations came. And mm-hmm. So I lived there in 1958, in the summer of 1958. My dad was working there. He was an engineer helping to erect a plant there. Charity at that time was living a short distance from where we were, but we would never have met because of all of the different barriers that existed between the two populations. In the 4 months I lived in Alabama, I really only got to know one person. Mm-hmm. And then we knew each other for a couple of years at the foster grandparent program.
Yes.
And the subject just came up in a conversation. Maybe it was when we were watching Hidden Figures.
I believe so, yeah, we watched a movie.
Oh, okay.
The subject of discrimination came up, and then we discovered that we lived within a few miles of each other.
Wow, that's quite a coincidence, actually.
So last year we ended up putting on a program over at Bullen where we did an interactive thing with students and talked about our experiences, and I showed some slides of photographs that I collected off of the net and so on.
So, Charity, you were telling me that you were born in Alabama, but then you did most of your schooling.
No, actually, I was born in Mississippi.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Only 3 years old from when my parents moved around and that. Mm-hmm. And then they came, where we ended up was in Arkansas.
In Arkansas.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was found out that from my birth certificate, because we didn't know much about that at that time. And then I grew up actually in Helena, Arkansas, and that's where I had my schooling and then and graduated from high school.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit, Charity, about what you remember about school? What's your earliest school memory?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, long time. But my earliest time was, it was small school. Yeah, we all went to pretty much the same grades. Not so many in the same grade in that, but a small school in that. For his classrooms and that, they were very crowded in that. My high school, we had to be bused from one area to another, and it was segregated and that. But I graduated from my high school in West Helena, Arkansas, where we had to be bused.
So there were there two high schools in this town, and one was for white students and one for black?
Yes.
Right.
Actually, where I lived, we could have walked to the...
you were that close. You could have walked to the high school.
High school for the white.
You weren't allowed to attend, though.
No.
Do you, did your schools ever interact with each other in sports or any other things?
No,
we did not. So you would more, if you had sports things, you'd play against other black high schools?
Yes.
Or,
okay. Yes.
And did you ever... Since you lived so close, you probably saw the white high school. So how was it?
Yeah.
What did it look like?
All
was it different? Can you compare the two?
Not really, because we didn't really find out about the white schools that, you know.
Because you weren't allowed inside.
Exactly.
Right. So can you tell me about your teachers? So one of the things that I've learned from studying education history is that a lot of times the teachers in black schools were really extra qualified because they were prohibited from being in other professions. Like they weren't allowed to go to college for other things like the law or other fields sometimes. So what were your impressions of your teachers? Did you have white teachers, black teachers, both, or tell
no,
me?
No, just black teachers.
Just black teachers. And so do you have any favorites that you can recall or anything like that?
Well, I can remember my English teacher, and I was in band in the high school, and I was other classes were from room to room, you know. I believe they overlap, too, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So sometimes you might have a teacher that taught English and history.
Yeah, yes.
Right. That seems pretty common. So, Mike, tell us a little bit about what your experience was. So you were only in Alabama briefly as a child. Is that correct?
Well, I was 15 years old. That was between my freshman and sophomore years in high school that I was there. There probably was some thought to the fact that we might stay down there with my dad, but it was very much of an experiment. We ended up coming back because there were threats against him. There were threats against us. In particular, there was a very traumatic physical threat against two of my sisters, third and fourth graders. They were at the little public pool in this little town that we had, and after swimming, they went back into the locker room, and their clothes were stuffed into the toilet. They had been urinated on, and there were feces stuffed in their shoes, and there were signs there. You can imagine what was written on them. But we should go home.
Because
we were blank lovers.
Because you were being, you were interacting and being friendly with African Americans.
My dad worked with a black minister in town because the factory was going to be an integrated factory. The company headquartered in Connecticut was not about to put up with segregation, and neither was the union. So that was very controversial. The city fathers were quite concerned, sort of like in the movie The Heat of the Night, mm-hmm. because if something had happened to my father, the company would have pulled the factory out mm-hmm. and would have killed the whole thing.
So it was supposed to be a big economic development for this community.
Oh, yes. But economically, my dad told us, be prepared. When we were driving down, he said, be prepared to see what the Depression was like.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie To Kill a Mockingbird had not been made at that time. The book had not been finished, although Harper Lee lived about 45 miles down the road from us. When we saw the movie, when it came out, it was just like we remembered in Linden, Alabama, except that it was black and white.
Right. But it was supposed to be set, the film was set 30 years earlier.
Yes.
But you said 30 years later, it still seemed like it was the same community. Like
the
landscape was the same,
Jim Crow environment, which is at the heart of the book, still existed. It was... Mm-hmm. Was still just as strong as it ever had been.
Right. So then your family decided to move back to Wisconsin? Or?
Yes, but especially so that my brother and I could finish a school up here. Later, there was never any question that we would attend a segregated school.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Catholic high school that we could have gone to. It was quite a ways away.
But it was integrated.
It was integrated. But even in the integrated high school, the kids sat in different sections, and not by school rule, but because the school was illegal, actually, under the laws of Alabama at the time, and they had to live in that community.
It was illegal because
the students separated each other.
So the laws said, even in a Catholic school that was privately financed, that students could not attend together if they were not the same color.
That's correct. Correct. Nothing.
Wow.
Kids were not allowed to be in the same park. There were deadlines. There were actually borders drawn on city maps, where whites could be and whites and blacks could
mm-hmm.
be. Even in church, the blacks and the whites would separate themselves.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember this from your childhood, Charity?
Oh yes,
yes,
but not so much. Well, when I grew up, I never did go to the same school mm-hmm. in that. And it wasn't until I came here in Wisconsin that I really interact mm-hmm. a lot, you know, with the white and black together in that.
Mm-hmm.
But in Arkansas and all in that area down there, we separated, you know, because
mm-hmm.
we weren't allowed to. And our parents taught us this, you know, because for our protection.
Right. You had to be very careful.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And I was from a family of 11
mm-hmm.
children and five girls and six brothers, and especially the boys and mm-hmm. that. They had to really be careful with everything they did. And we did, too, of course.
Right.
And I was reading in Ralph Abernathy's autobiography recently that a lot of the segregation was, in a sense, voluntary because you wanted to live in a peaceful environment. You didn't want to be in confrontation all of the time.
Right.
And
Right. Well, it sounds like from the story you told about your little sisters that, you know, just even showing basic kindness could get you into all kinds of trouble and be threatened.
Yes, there were some other incidents like that. If you've seen the movie The Help, you know all the rules mm-hmm. that were talked about there. There was a young black woman. She was the daughter of the minister my dad worked with. And she was often at our house helping with my youngest sister, who was profoundly physically and mentally retarded. And there was a delegation, supposedly Southern hospitality. When we moved in, people came over with fried chicken and pecan pies and things. And it was all very friendly. And then you know, my mother was taken aside by the ladies, and she was told all the rules that Lily Mae was, she was not to use the restroom in our house, and we were not to be driving into town, to into the black area of town to pick her up. Her place was to walk, and rules like that, which she was not to eat with us, all those sorts of things. And, of course, we never required her to walk the mile and a half to the gas station to use the restroom or go out in the field. And she was always welcome to eat with us, but she would not eat with us for the logical reason that she was afraid that one of us kids might say something inadvertently that would make trouble for everybody, and especially for her.
So the whole time that Mike was describing this, Charity was nodding her head. So can you tell us, like, what about that sounds familiar to you?
Oh, yes. He's right about that. I didn't experience, because, as I said, I was younger, and then I didn't go.
You weren't working.
Working, and that. But, and we always had to, and we knew about it, of course, the back door. Always, and you know, never the front door. That was something else that came up that I thought of. Oh, well, even from the one thing I did experience all the time when we went to the store or walking down the sidewalk, we literally had to get off the sidewalk and walk on the
in the road.
Yeah, in the road or whatever.
If there was a white person coming toward you.
Yeah, or a bunch of, or one, or whatever.
In the little city of Linden, where I lived, blacks were only allowed in this, in the city on Saturdays during the daytime. If they were in town during the week, they had to be there on white person's business, and they had to bring a note with them or be wearing a uniform, like a cleaning person or something like that.
Right. Okay. I just need to take a reintroduction break. You're listening to WGTD HDFM, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of school segregation in the pre-civil rights era in the South with Mrs. Charity Cooks and Mr. Mike Kehoe is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again there, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in the discussion there. So at some point, Charity, you decided to move north, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about what went into that decision. It sounded like you had some family here in Kenosha. Is that correct?
Yes, uncle and aunt. I wrote them and asked them if I can come. And this is when I graduated from high school.
So right after you finished high school?
2 weeks after.
Wow, okay. And then when you came here, you started working right away?
I found a part-time job, yes, and started working. And actually, I worked, I guess, about 4 or 5 years, maybe not that long, I'm sure. I can't remember exactly the time frame, but they built a house and that, and they moved in it. And so I didn't move with them. So I ended up getting married about the year after.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then you started your own family.
Yes.
So What did you notice that was different when you moved here, besides the snow, which I'm sure is obvious, but what was it like to live here compared to living in Arkansas?
Well, my cousin graduated on the same day I came, and then I found out that she was in a different school than I was in.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because she graduated from Bradford.
She went to Bradford High School. Mm-hmm. So was her high school was integrated then?
Yes.
And you were surprised to hear that?
Oh, no, I wasn't surprised, but I'm just saying.
You're just saying that it was.
That it was different.
That was a big thing.
That for me to witness and be involved in, because it was the same day and we went right away mm-hmm. to the graduation. And so this was like.
The first thing the that first you thing. Saw mm-hmm. was that was an mm-hmm. integrated high school graduation. How
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah.
And then once you started settling in, you know, what else did you find that was different in the work world and sort of everyday life?
Yeah, in working, because I worked at, Rosella's Cleaners.
Oh,
was
okay.
My first job with the public mm-hmm. and that. And then that was different.
Yes.
Because I wasn't used to the interaction with all different people.
Right. You probably didn't even have much chance to even talk informally with white people.
No. Not at all.
So I'm curious then, so you got married and you have three sons, is that what you
yes.
said? So then they went to school here in Kenosha.
Oh, yeah.
So what was it like here. For you as a parent to experience the schools here? And I'm sure it was, I'm sure there were some things that weren't always perfect, but how was it different than your own childhood schooling experience?
Different in
so were there schools integrated all the way through? Depending on the neighborhood you live in, you know, schools aren't always totally integrated, but your kids did.
Oh yes, right
mixed
here
schools
in,
yeah
in Kenosha,
did
yeah.
they have you said all of your teachers were black, did they have any black teachers or that's not
yeah.
that common here? They did. Okay. Uh-huh. Any other thing that you remember about their schooling that you thought was, you know, different? Or
well, all I could say is I was determined to do my best to see that they had got a better life since I ended up. I really didn't plan on getting married right away. I wanted mm-hmm. to go to college and all of that. But between the time I worked and tried to do everything I can to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband, you know, we both worked at the same time,
mm-hmm.
some of the time. Mm-hmm.
So was it, did you feel like they had a really different high school education
oh, yeah.
than you did?
Oh, yeah.
Right? In what ways
much
did
better.
You think it was different?
I think they had a better opportunity than we did for learning things and doing different things. And two of them wanted to be in sports, and my middle child was in music in that. And so we did our best to have them go to the music lesson and get them to band, you know, the practice and all that
mm-hmm.
to make a better life.
Great.
Yeah.
Mike, do you have any thoughts about that? If you compare what you saw of schools the brief time that you were in Alabama compared to what they were like when you were here?
Well, what I would say on that subject is that although I came up here for education mm-hmm. purposes, that my dad's job kept him down there. So we still had connections with Alabama. And later on, when the school system was integrated, then my youngest sister, Patty, went to high school in the neighboring county, Choctaw County. Mm-hmm. However, it was still separated high school,
mm-hmm.
and it still is today, because what they did when Patty was down there in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, is that the courts had forced them to integrate the school system. So what they did was they created a voucher system to finance a separate private high school system. So Patty went to the public school with a couple of whites, but it was almost entirely black. And that situation has continued right to today. There are two high schools in Linden. The public school is entirely black. I have photographs of the graduating class and the faculty. Entirely black, and the private school is entirely white. Things may be different in larger cities, but in the rural South, that is still the case. And I recently, I've had a fascination with Alabama ever since, and a strange love of the state. It's a beautiful state, and there are nice people. I mean, Ralph Abernathy and Martin Luther King came from there, as well as as well as George Wallace and Roy Moore. Alabama spends considerably more money per pupil at any age group you want to pick. Considerably more money on any per pupil on pupils who are attending the voucher schools, which are virtually entirely white.
And so those voucher schools are not open to black students?
There is a formula that applies to people who are in the public school who want to apply for a transfer to admission in the private high schools that is quite restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
And so a very limited number of people are able to attend it. And there's also a feeling in the two counties that I'm familiar with, there's also a feeling among the black people in those counties that they feel that their teachers are more dedicated and that they're getting a very sound education mm-hmm. in those public schools. And so there is not a strong motivation to want to go to the white schools.
Mm-hmm.
One of the differences that Martin Luther King had with the with being the Southern Christian Leadership Conference with people who came down from the North in the civil rights movement for busing and so on, was he said, I don't want to sit at the Woolworths counter next to some cracker and eat. What I want is schooling for our people and the vote for our people. Mm-hmm. I don't want to necessarily mingle with them. They are not the kind of people I want to associate with.
Mm-hmm.
And so there continue to be a separation of the societies and the cultures.
Mm-hmm. And how recently have you visited?
Oh, since my parents died. My parents moved up here in old age. And since they died, I have not been down to Alabama. So it's been since, aside from contact with some people that I have at the University of West Alabama mm-hmm. and at the Black Belt Museum, I have not been to Alabama since 1990 anyway.
Okay. Right. So, Charity, do you still have family living in Arkansas?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I have two sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, oh, no. Yes, it's two sisters, one brother, and nieces and nephews. And, yes, quite a bit of family.
So you've probably visited many times, and they've probably visited you.
It's been a while.
You don't go back and forth that much. No.
Not that much, no.
I was disappointed and surprised when I began to attend the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and mm-hmm. later Marquette Law School to find out how much segregation there was in the city of Milwaukee.
Right.
In particular, the violence that was occurring during the open housing marches and during the movement to desegregate the Milwaukee schools, which were, it probably wasn't the school board that was segregating them as much as the housing patterns and laws like the laws that restricted housing that kept the neighborhood concept working to keep blacks and whites.
Right. Well, so part of what I was kind of trying to get to at this point is what I think is interesting about your journey, Charity, and also about Mike's experiences, is that we are actually at the point now where Wisconsin and Milwaukee in particular are the most segregated in the country. And in fact, for black boys, Wisconsin is a worse state to live in if you look at graduation rates, incarceration rates, et cetera, than Alabama or Mississippi or any other state in the country. And so I'm always curious to sort of compare, what What you both described was obviously not from your childhood is not something we wanted to replicate, but it looks like in a way we have here in Wisconsin in some places. So I'm wondering if either of you have any thoughts on that or whether you find that to be not true here and if Kenosha is an exception, why or why not?
It's definitely present here. It is more subtle and a bit more sophisticated than the legal segregation that went down in the South. But I was a long-term treatment foster parent for almost 30 years. My first foster son, who was with me for 5 years, was black.
Mm-hmm.
And we experienced a number of things that were totally a surprise to him. But we had threats. There were times when I would send Tony to stay with friends in different parts of town. We did have rocks thrown through our windows a couple of times.
And this would have been when? In the
80s? This would have been in the 90s, yes.
Okay, wow.
So it was present. One of the reasons that people don't wear hoodies in school these days is because that there was some youth gang activity, and one of the youth gangs that particularly that was very active at Tremper was a group called the Alabama Slammers. And there was an incident that they used to all wear Alabama.
Like University
fan
of Alabama
clothing, yes,
fan clothing. Okay, yeah.
And stuff like that. But it really came to a head when the Alabama Slammers at Tremper were distributing deer tags that had been altered to say the word we don't say on radio. Mm-hmm. It starts with an N, N tags.
Wow. So these were white students wearing Alabama clothing.
Right.
Probably never set foot in Alabama in their lives.
They were all Southerners.
Yeah. They were.
They were all, I can't say all because I didn't know all of them. But there was a group of people who had, you know, when I did child support work, there was a sizable percentage of the people that we had child support orders against who were from northern Mississippi, northern Alabama, southern Alabama, particular localities. But they found a receptive group of kindred spirits up here.
So I know this probably isn't easy to talk about charity, but have you had any experiences that you'd be willing to share with us around school, either as you're a foster grandparent or your kids' experiences in school? Even though the schools were integrated, were there incidents that were difficult for them?
You mean at this time?
Yeah, or now, or when your children were in school.
Not so much, because I just can't think back for but I do know that had to have been, there were some things because of them being boys and that, you know, that did happen, but nothing I would want to mention at this time because I can't remember. But for me, in the school that I'm in now, the foster grandparents, is nothing. It's a very, very nice school, and the kids pretty well. They talked to me like they were really nice about addressing me and all of that, you know.
Right.
Grandma love and all that.
From the article, it sounds like they do more than address you. They hug you. They look forward to your presence. They want to. What do you do when you're a foster grandparent? You go into the school, and what sorts of things do you do? Do you have particular students that are your foster grandchildren?
Well, I deal with all of I work with a teacher.
Oh, okay.
Two that I'm pretty much doing the day. We have to do at least 15 hours, no less than 15, I should put it that way, right? Because some of the foster grandparents do more hours than that if they can. And I work with two of the teachers in an art school, art class, and in the regular classroom. We tutor them and do centers and whatever teacher wants that needs help with.
How did you get involved with it, the program?
At the senior center when I retired, and then I went for an art class. And someone mentioned that to me before I had Wednesday off for the class. And they have it posted on the boards, and then for the grand, you know, older adults to help with that. And so I started with them. I thought maybe just 3 hours or whatever. So I've been doing it for 7 years. I'll just put it that way.
Charity is absolutely superb in her ability to communicate with the kids. Love of reading, love of learning, the importance of learning. Just by being there every day and showing up, you send
do
a message.
But
love as well. She makes her school a very comfortable place for kids to learn.
What more could you ask, really, right? So, you know, part of why we wanted to look at this subject today was just to sort of talk about what are the advantages of having integrated schools, and what was lost under the system of segregation. What kinds of things, you know, maybe in potential or in sort of misdirected energy was going on in trying to keep things segregated? And what do we gain by having people interacting with anyone?
Primary sin of the segregated school system was the way it denied so many potentially great persons from fulfilling their destiny, denied so many worthy persons of having a healthy, fulfilling, satisfying life. It was a continuation of slavery in many aspects.
And, well, I guess one example of what's wonderful about having it gone is the fact that, or having less segregation, I guess we should say, is the fact that you're in these schools, both of you, interacting with all different kinds of children and seeing them interacting with each other. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No.
It's progress. The Senior Corps, I don't know whether it started under Kennedy or under Johnson, but it's 50 years old now.
Right.
And the reason it's still going strong is that it is very effective. I think we are very well well thought of in our schools. We're very, very much appreciated in our schools. And those of us who do it, there may be some trepidation when we first get involved, but we find ourselves so motivated by it because we get benefits from
That's
it too.
True.
It's right. It's probably the best part of your week.
Yeah. I'm 75 years old. What? How could I better be spending my time
right
now than doing things well, including this. One of the things, if you were a white person who lived in the South during those days. Is you wonder, did I do enough? Did I say enough? Did I take some satisfaction? What can I do now? Because people are beginning to forget those times, and I feel a responsibility to do something about it. And one of the ways I can do something about it on a very basic level without even talking about it is simply by being in school and working with kids.
So, Charity, in preparing for this interview, Mike sent me a newspaper article from the Kenosha News where you were featured. You were in the picture in the article has you sitting in a chair with Ronald McDonald on your lap. So could you explain that situation and how it happened and what the kids thought of that at the school where you're a foster grandparent?
Yes. At the assembly, the teacher that I work with always set a chair next to hers for me to sit in, and it was on the outside row, and I didn't think of anything sitting there, which I had done it, been sitting there before, and then we didn't know the McDonald's was coming. I didn't know it, and I don't think most of the kids knew. Came in, grabbed me right away, and gave me a big hug, and then went and did his talking and that. Afterwards, he was leaving and came right over and sat on my lap. Mm-hmm. And every child everybody in the building just went wow. Mm-hmm. And just started laughing, fell over in that. And I think they really enjoyed that. And after that happened, they all came up to me and had something to say. And I think that was a really wow moment for me. And I really love working with the kids. And we give them hugs. They come to me, hug. Always try and speak. And we have something that they are not supposed to do is talk in the hall. Mm-hmm. So when they come down the hall, they want to talk or say hi. But we have to just put up our little pinky and wave that way. Mm-hmm. So this is what we do.
Okay. And Mike?
Well, I think that photograph says better than words the kinds of things that are hopeful about the situation is kids getting along together, kids having role models.
Yes.
From outside their own circles and the happiness and so on that goes with that. So it makes me optimistic for the future. Mm-hmm. Problems are always going to be with us. But I know that Sherry and I consider ourselves fortunate to be able to make some changes in the doors and windows that some of the kids that we work with are going to be able to go through.
And have witnessed a lot of changes in your lifetimes as well.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
That's right. Well, I would like to thank you both, Charity Cooks and Mike Kehoe, for sharing your experiences with us about schooling in the South in the pre-civil rights and civil rights era, and about your work as foster grandparents here in the Kenosha Public Schools. You are listening to WGTD HD-FM, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of school segregation and desegregation with Charity Cooks and Mike Kehoe is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Good morning, and welcome to the WGTD Radio Theater. This morning, we start our 14th season. Yes, our 14th season! And show number 112, with our annual Cartoons on the Radio show, with a mashup of favorite cartoon characters. A Cartoons on the Radio mashup, 2018, God Help the Queen, was written by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup, and stars members of the 91.1 Players. Support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha law firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, and McTernan, a full-service law firm with an emphasis on personal injury, civil litigation, and business law. Also supporting the WGTD Radio Theater is the not-for-profit Brown Ulstrup Performing Arts Foundation, located in Salem Lakes, Wisconsin. The mission of the foundation is to develop and promote excellence in the performing arts